Welcome to the PDH online course on the 2008 National Electric Code. We're ready to go into section 430 motors, and I apologize too much. People tell me that we're not going to invest a lot of time in motors because motors are covered by separate PDH online courses. There's a lot of very important content in this portion of the code, and as previously stated, we're going to kind of swoop down and catch some high points. That's all. Section 430 is about installing motors. Nothing much has changed for 50 years, and contractors are still skipping the local safety disconnects, and it's still rare to find labeling identifying voltage, load served, and power source. Worse, firms with strong specifications accompany them with unreadable alphanumeric sequences, which are supposed to communicate. I feel very differently about a 208 volt size 1 motor starter and a 480 volt size 1 motor starter. Actually, most interpretations of OSHA arc flash regulations feel very differently about 208 volts and 480 volts. Article 445 discusses generators. The world is presently changing rapidly, and generators are being used differently than they were even 10 years ago. Important considerations are different than they were 10 years ago. The products are so much better than they were 10 years ago. There is a very bare bones requirement for safe installation of generators in the National Electric Code. There is a separate NFPA publication for installing emergency generators. But we'll look at emergency systems later in Article 700. Sidebar discussion on advances in emergency generators. There are many specialty areas in electrical design which can be handled by letting the vendor help you work through the project needs and write the specification, and sometimes provide installation diagrams. Generator specification is a topic that lends itself to heavy reliance upon the vendor. Even if you have your own spreadsheet to total the loads and consider the starting requirements, it's good to have a vendor verify it, either informally before bid or as part of the procurement specification. We got into a discussion this week about an emergency power generator for a biological treatment plant. It needs 260 horsepower pumps in continuous operation, or the bugs die. The process engineer was proud that we wouldn't have to upsize the generator for harmonics from variable frequency drives because he wanted fixed speed pumps. We answered that we agreed. Now we only have to upsize the generator to provide inrush for the second pump after the first pump is online. In the last 10 years, generator manufacturers have embraced electronic controls for generator and switching. This has produced reliable zero-crossing power switching and reliable power line paralleling, even though utilities are very slow to accept it. Many engineering specifications still contain paragraphs on third-party exciters and third-party relaying. This is not needed, and for the most part, it's not even possible. I like the idea of a vendor switching out a bad module during warranty rather than everyone trying to figure out which part is malfunctioning. Section 450, transformers. Section 450 discusses transformers. The hard part of specifying transformers is to provide protection but not trip out on inrush. The code addresses this in many and confusing ways. For small general purpose transformers, the manufacturer will give you a table of recommended protection. Ignore this at your own risk. The National Electric Code requires UL listing, which includes a requirement of installing equipment per the manufacturer's instructions. For larger transformers, perhaps 30 kVA and larger, the inrush is a bigger problem, and the hardship of a false trip is bigger. Table 450.3.B requires maximum of 125% protection on the secondary. That is 125% of the full load secondary current, and that determines the size of the fuse or circuit breaker. This is with separate protective or main downstream panel. And a maximum of 250% protection on the primary. The reason for the generous number on the primary is because we have got an inrush on big transformers, and you don't want to trip it out when it comes back from a power failure. I mean, you got enough problems when you're coming back from a power failure. You don't want to have to look for a circuit breaker that was sized a little too small, and this transformer requires a manual reset. Section 450.4 presents auto transformers. Auto transformers are sufficiently confusing that a separate PDH online course is offered on connecting 230 volt motors to 208 volt systems using an auto transformer. Surprisingly, a properly sized auto transformer does not need separate protection. That's because it's a series element. If the supply is sized properly for the load, and the auto transformer is sized for the load, no extra protection is required. Two illustrations from the PDH online course E162 are included below. And I'll try to talk you through the pictures here. Now, again, I just said if the protection for the feeder is sized for the load, you don't need separate protection for the transformer since it's a series element. That is not what what is illustrated in the pictures in the written version of this. We're showing 120 240 volt bus and not even identifying what the current restrictions are on it. We're showing 240. Oh, there's something wrong here because it's supposed to be 208 to 240. Let me see what's going on here. Single form. I took this off of a drawing we've been using and sending out on construction jobs for a long time. Maybe I just don't understand it. 240 is coming in. Oh, and it's labeled wrong. It's a correct connection. It's a 120 240 volt bus. And then it's in lag connection or a buck connection so that the 120 and 120 or 240, that's on the primary. And then we're subtracting 16 and subtracting another 16 to get the 208 on the other side. And unfortunately, the label says 240.1 where it's coming out 208. But the idea is that you use the high voltage winding, or you got the high voltage, you use the low voltage winding to add or subtract. If you want to go up a little bit, you add the 16 volts. If you want to go down a little bit, you subtract the 16 volts. And they're very clear in the instructions in the little sheet that comes with it, which direction is additive and which is subtractive. And you hook it up and see if it works. I mean, if you subtract when you thought you were adding, there's a goof there. Let's turn those around. Okay, same thing for three phase. And I hope I don't have to apologize for a drafting error on this one too. That's amazing. Okay, yes, this has 240 three phase coming in, 208 coming out of it. This is called an open delta connection. It's an open delta buck boost connection. So we're taking one 240 leg, and we're subtracting 16 and subtracting another 16 to make a 208 leg. Then we're picking off another two, and we're saying this is coming in at 240, so we connected at 240 on the primary. Then we subtract 16 and we subtract another 16, and it comes out 208. Now you notice we've gone two directions from a reference leg. Nothing special about this reference leg, it's just we went down on both sides of it, so that the other two are now 208 from this reference leg, where they had been 240 from this reference leg. So we carry the reference leg straight through. And in the drawing that I'm publishing, I'm showing a bus on the high side, a bus on the low side, and talk about whole hog, I've got a protection circuit breaker from the high side and a protection circuit breaker from the low side. But you realize that's not necessary. If the upstream protection for the 240 volt circuit is sized for the load, you need no protection whatsoever on the buck boost transformer. If it's a bus like in a motor control center, as we're suggesting here, then yeah, you need protection going in to the buck boost transformer. And the reason for that is that you're supplying 240 volts off this thing, and if it draws too much on the 240 volt side, you want it to trip out. And that's what's going to happen if you overload it. It's going to draw too much on the 240 volt side. Because of the way it's connected, all of the current from the secondary side goes through this primary breaker, so it is added into it. I mean, it's a real good protection scheme, and there's no need for secondary protection. If you have protected your buck boost transformer properly, there's no need for secondary protection. But I put this in because people have a hard time understanding this buck boost connection. If you look at it, you got the high side and leave that alone, then you got the low side and you either add that or subtract that. It's clear. There's just no confusion. People keep thinking, well, doesn't the primary interact with a secondary? Well, kinda. You draw current through the secondary, you draw current through the primary. That's how transformers work, but that's why we got protection on it. You don't draw too much current or it trips out. And again, you size this thing for the amps that you want. KVA is a very confusing way to size buck boost transformers, even though you may very well end up buying, let me look at the example here. It's a 10 kVA motor load, and we're putting in two Acme 13073 transformers, and I can't tell the rating from that, and 45 amp protection on it. But again, you've got to, in your mind, separate the primary from the secondary, and it's not confusing. Section 450 transformers. Whoa! During the first energy shortage, about 1973, building owners, I think this is about power factor capacitors. There's a bad heading here that will have to be connected. We're talking about capacitors, though. Owners became excited about energy savings and monthly billing savings by installing power factor correction capacitors. 10 years later, most of the installations had at least one leg open due to a blown fuse. This does bad things to the electrical system, but nobody cared then or now. The code gives rules for installing power factor capacitors. Vendor guides give very detailed instructions for sizing and installing them. Nobody emphasizes the importance of maintenance. Large industrials require many individual capacitors for each large motor, or buy step capacitors with controllers for installation at the motor control center or substation. Both are good plans. A fixed capacitor at the motor control center or substation will cause leading power factor when the plant is out of service, and that can be very bad. Now, I'm not sure if that communicated well. You can put an individual capacitor on each large motor and switch it when you switch the motor. That means that the capacitor's on when the motor's on, the capacitor's off when the motor's off. Sounds right. And it's reasonably economic. It's not a mistake in any sense. Another way to do it is figure we got a lot of motors out there. Let's not worry about a lot of motors. Let's put in a step capacitor that comes on more when it needs more. And they come with a controller that measures the power factor of the line and then corrects it. So, isn't that keen? And that works great too. But again, capacitors are very sensitive to transients, and the guy that sells you the capacitor doesn't want to blow it out, so he puts a good fuse on it. So the thing's sensitive to transient, and it's got a good fuse on it, that fuse is going to blow, going to protect the capacitor, we hope. Article 470, resistors and reactors. Article 470 discusses resistors and reactors. Both are a little exotic in today's plants. Formerly, DC motors had resistors for armature and for field. Today, you occasionally see resistors for dynamic braking. I'm trying to remember if that's correct. No, regenerative would be pump it back into the line. Dynamic pumps it into a resistor, so that was right. Dynamic braking on a variable frequency drive. They are part of the purchased equipment and require no special care beyond following the manufacturer's instruction and make sure that you've prepared to reject the heat from the electric room, and that just means a thermostatically controlled exhaust fan. Reactors were once offered in place of more expensive isolation transformers for variable frequency drives. Today, most variable frequency drives are direct connected to the supplying branch circuit. Reactors remain a component on the load side of the variable frequency drive to limit high frequency ringing on the motor leads, which will blow out the motor leads. application guides and application specialists are ambiguous on specific cut points for the addition of motor reactors, that is, reactors on the motor side of the VFD. I recommend a 3% reactor on each motor leg when lead lengths exceed 30 feet. This will help on IEEE 519 harmonic mitigation, but a 3% reactor on each drive leg on the incoming side of the VFD will help even more. Section 480 relates to batteries. Be aware that sealed lead acid batteries perform well and require minimal safety accommodations beyond short circuit and overcurrent protection and disconnect switches. Vented lead acid batteries require considerably more spill containment and ventilation. Exotic chemistries are being commercialized daily and will become part of our daily lives during the next decade. Something I swore I wouldn't get into, but because I like you, I really like you, I'm going to share it with you. This section started out by saying sealed lead acid, good, vented lead acid problems. The reason you care about these problems is vented lead acid are more economical. They last longer. That means you don't have to buy them as often. They require a little bit of maintenance, but truly you should provide maintenance on sealed lead acid batteries also. What happens on batteries is you always have a string of them. You don't have one battery. You've got if they're 2 volts, you want 60 batteries in a row to get 120 volts, like they use 120 volts for switching substations. Or you use, I think you use like 160 volts on inverter, you know, an uninterruptible power source, because it has to provide the peak of the sine wave. So if you're getting 120 out of it, you've got to have 160 going into it. Well, so if you got a string of batteries, what happens is one of the cells fails first. Now, isn't that essential? I mean, it has to be one fails first. Now, yeah, 2 could fail first, but you've got a lot of good cells and one bad one out there. Now, if you've decided these are sealed batteries and I don't need to do any maintenance on them, when one fails, you replace the whole string. Now, if you're going around with one of these little battery testers, you know which one's the bad one. You replace the bad one, and it keeps going for another 6 months or 2 years or whatever. At some point, it becomes foolish to keep replacing individual cells. And yeah, it's wise to replace the whole string of them, especially if it causes some kind of shutdown when the cell fails. But don't get the idea that sealed lead acid are maintenance-free. They're maintenance-free when you're making a big mistake. They require periodic maintenance. Vented lead acid requires periodic maintenance, and vented lead acid also requires spill containment and ventilation. Forgive me, I'm back off my high horse now. Chapter 5 is hazardous locations, and I'm ready to take a break again. I'm always ready to take a break again. If you would like to keep rolling, then go ahead and start the next session immediately.